Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Thanks to Vodafone Business. With cybersecurity solutions from Vodafone, your business can hack off the hackers. See vodafone.ie/business.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome to the show. Coming up over the next hour, Redmi, Honor, Oppo and OnePlus all have new phones out. John Riley will join me with a rundown on what they have to offer. I'll speak with Stefan Jurak, Senior Vice President UI UX Development at BMW Group, about the company's new panoramic iDrive Plus.
Americans are being buried under an avalanche of misinformation and disinformation.
As Joe Biden leaves the Oval Office, we'll look back at what he achieved in terms of tackling big tech during his term. If you want to get in touch, you can do so right now by dropping me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. Later in the show, I'll answer some of your tech questions and we'll have the latest on the potential TikTok ban. Will it go ahead? What will happen if it does? And very interestingly, what will happen if it doesn't? We'll have all of that coming up in just a bit. But we're only a few weeks into the year and we've already seen a host of new phones being launched into the Irish market. John Riley of TheEffect.net is with me now for a run through. John, how are you?
Great, Jess. How are you?
I'm very well. So as I said at the top there, we've got a whole host of new phones and we'll talk through what you've seen and what we're expecting. But before we get to the phones, we have to talk about something that has been rumoured for a long time. But we got a bit of a confirmation this week, the Nintendo Switch 2.
Yes, so finally, after what feels like a decade of rumours, ever since the original Switch launched, Nintendo did push out a YouTube video, basically, showcasing the new Nintendo Switch 2, much to gamers and even my own personal delight, because it's finally time that the Switch got its upgrade. And it was a short 2.5 minute video, I think, and it didn't really reveal a whole lot. Basically, it confirmed the rumours you mentioned in terms of its design. So if your listeners can imagine, the original Nintendo Switch, basically just a bit bigger with black handles or kind of Joy-Con controllers on the side, definitely going to be a hell of a lot more powerful, and this display is going to be larger. And yeah, that's kind of all we really got. We did get a sneak peek of what looks like a brand new Mario Kart game, which is always a given on a new Nintendo console, but we kind of have to hold our breath now or wait until the 2nd of April when Nintendo have confirmed that a new kind of YouTube video showcasing a lot more detail and, you know, games as well for the new console is going to launch. So we got a good few weeks to wait yet, but the gaming community is very excited that this new handheld is coming from Nintendo.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see the internal upgrades and the screen upgrades, because Switch is one of those consoles that actually already has a pretty good offering between the standard one, the Lite, and then the OLED version. So you'd want something special, I suppose, to justify, particularly if you are a Switch gamer, to justify upgrading, because my Switch and my boyfriend's Switch, they're still pretty much perfect.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And we're kind of in the funny window, or the funny times, where previously Nintendo would have completely and utterly changed the whole concept of their new console coming from previous consoles. So for what kind of feels like forever, for the first time in forever, they've kind of just done an iterative update rather than a complete rethinking of a home console. So, like, I do hope that, you know, the display packs some seriously impressive tech. Rumors have it that unfortunately for cost saving purposes, they may be going back to an LCD panel for this kind of new iteration, and then I guess down the line going to grab us again by launching an OLED model, because I personally have the OLED model and it's just a much, much better display than what was on the original Switch, which was LCD. But again, first world problems. The processing power, yes, that's really where the money's going to be made here, because the original Switch's processor is 10 years old now in 2025. So it was definitely showing its age. You still have to say that the developer, especially the first party developers from Nintendo, like the Mario games and the Zelda games, really did work some magic on that chip. Some titles, I just don't have an idea how they got them to run on such an old graphics chip. But I really can't wait to see some of the more flagship titles that are coming to the new console. And rumor has it that it should be and potentially could be a lot easier for third-party developers to bring their games over to keep them on a par with the new consoles like the PS5 and the Xbox Series consoles. But we have to wait to see what actually happens there.
Okay, well, we will, of course, have updates as and when we get them. But that is exciting news. And I think it's good to kind of get eyes on that early doors in the year so that we have something to look forward to as the months go by. But let's talk about some of the smartphones, because as we were talking about before Christmas, there's an awful lot going on in the market. It's been a good few years since we've had so much activity from so many different brands. And I know that you've been looking at some of the lesser known brands, shall we say. So run me through what you've been looking at.
Yeah, so as you said, there's been quite an onslaught of new devices launching in the country, both from the end of last year and coming and in the coming weeks. So just to round out last year, we had Oppo kind of come back into the Irish market. Your listeners may or may not be aware of the brand. They're coming out of China, and you know, they were here up until about 2021, 2022. And then just kind of legal issues, I think, impacted them, unfortunately, on the back end. So they couldn't really launch their devices here in Europe. But now, back in November or the end of November last year, they finally got to launch their flagship device, the Oppo Find X8 Pro in Ireland. So that's coming in at 1,199, so €1,200. So definitely not cheap, but it is a flagship. And it's packing some incredibly impressive specs. You've got four 50 megapixel cameras on the back. You've got AI telescopic zoom. I've reviewed this device. The review is on theeffect.net, and I'm really, really impressed. The zoom in particular, using AI to kind of help add additional detail, is just knockout. I've taken photos on Dunleary Pier back towards the Poolbeg Towers, and I'm just like, wow, that a handset can capture that detail. So great to see Oppo back. As I said, launched last November and available directly on Oppo Ireland's online site. So you can find the full review on our site and get the link there. But yeah, I'm glad they're back in the country. Better competition for the Irish market. We also then just recently had OnePlus kind of had their OnePlus 13 launch back on January 7th. And that's actually coming in at a really aggressive price of just 999, or basically €1,000 for their flagship. These guys have been around for a good while now, and they've been available via their own direct channels here in Ireland, with a couple of kind of pop-up offers across the kind of retailers over the years. But again, it's available directly on OnePlus's Irish website. As I said, €999, packing the latest, most powerful Snapdragon processor. It's got a 6,000 milliamp hour battery that's capable of 100 watt charging. So you're getting incredibly impressive cameras, one of the biggest batteries in a flagship to date at 6,000 milliamps. That's basically easily a two-day phone. And then the cameras on the rear, they're continuing their collaboration with that Swedish camera company Hasselblad, which really helped to refine the tuning of the sensors to make sure they're giving you as professional a look to your photos as possible. So our full review is going to be coming soon to theeffect.net, but it's really good to see them coming in so aggressively still on their 13th iteration, because OnePlus was always seen as the flagship killer, was their tagline way back in the day, and they really seem to be coming in with a flagship themselves that's undercutting the market. So those guys are packing a punch.
Yeah, it's interesting to see the price points though, because back in the day, they would have been the flagship killer in that they were offering an incredible spec phone for, say, €500 or €600 versus €1,000 or €1,100 for an iPhone or a Samsung or whatever it is. It's still big money though. So I know you've yet to do your full review, but even in terms of the Oppo, what would be the killer feature that would make you opt for something like that versus, say, the Pixel 9?
That's a great question. I guess it's going to be purely subjective in terms of your usage of the. I know Oppo, as I said, was out of the market for a couple of years, so people might have fallen out of love with the operating system, with the way they developed their software. You know, we obviously are big fans of the Pixel range and the usability of it. That's just how user friendly the operating system is. But Oppo really just packs a lot more kind of powerful camera specs, like sheer brute force, on topped up with AI. And that seems to be where a lot of the brands I'm talking about today are going, in terms of adding that extra flourish, that extra kind of USP on top of their camera offerings. Because it's interesting that, you know, OnePlus and Oppo are actually sister companies coming out of China. So their offering is quite similar on paper, but they have their own little additions and tweaks and variables that make them stand out from one another. And as I said, you know, OnePlus is coming in at 999. And that's a lot of money. There's no denying it. And then you've got the Oppo Find X8 Pro, its sister kind of company, and its phone coming in at 1,200. So you've got €200 there, and you're trying to find what's the 200 getting me on top of what OnePlus is offering. But then, as you mentioned, the Pixel range, the 9 series coming in at 799 maybe, or 899. So you're saving another €100. it's going to be a case of consumers really just deciding what they want in their phone. Do they want a massive battery that charges fast? Do they want the best zoom possible? Do they want a display that can pack the brightest pick, you know, the pick brightest, the highest brightness level possible? It's just good that these devices are there for consumer choice more than anything. And then obviously price is one of the biggest differentiators and one of the biggest deciding factors. So it's not always the case that the cheapest phone wins, but there is ones that people that want that extra bit of capability will pay that extra that premium as well.
Yeah, and I suppose I find it interesting that the Oppo and the OnePlus are available through their websites. I know that people still like to be able to pick up a phone, see it in the hand, kind of get an idea for the feel on the back of the phone and so on. And I do wonder if we will eventually see them in stores, or again, maybe you don't need to. Let me know, techtalk@newstalk.com. Does it bother you? Do you go into a store before you buy a phone? But it's interesting that the next phone on your list, the Redmi Note 14 Pro Plus, that is going to be in stores.
Yes, and yeah, again, that's quite a mouthful. Redmi would be what is Xiaomi, the large Chinese manufacturer, Chinese smartphone maker. They're kind of more mid-range branding or brand offering. So it's the Redmi Note 14 Pro Plus, which is part of a series of Redmi Note 14 phones that are all making their way to Ireland. There's four phones in total, and they're launching in Ireland at the end of the month. I was over in London at an event recently, kind of getting at some hands-on time with each of the devices. And yeah, look, they've always been, you know, we're at the 14th iteration of these phones, so they've been around for quite a while, and they've kind of in different variations. They have been in the Irish market and been available across the kind of the more mid-range offerings for the likes of Tesco Mobile and whatnot. But this Redmi Note 14 Pro Plus is coming in at just 529. Again, that's not, you know, that's not as expensive as the devices we've already mentioned, but it's still a lot of money. But you are getting quite a lot of bang for your buck here. And you know, we are the phone geeks, the phone nerds. We want the best of the best, and we appreciate the best of the best. But a lot of people just want a phone that'll last them all day long and be able to capture some really impressive photos. And Redmi seem to be capitalizing on this kind of demand. You've got a large 6.67-inch AMOLED display. You've got 3,000 nits of peak brightness, so a good bright display. You've got 12 gigs of RAM and 512 gigs of storage. That's more storage than most people will ever need, and more RAM than they'll ever need. And speaking of cameras then, there's a 200 megapixel main sensor on the back of this device, and then an 8 megapixel ultra-wide. So your ultra-wides might not be perfect, but the 200 megapixel should hopefully make up for that for your general day-to-day photos. A pretty impressive 5,100 milliamp hour battery, 120 watt charging. So a lot of kind of what would have been flagship features only a number of years ago are packed into what is this mid-range device. So as I said, they're coming at the end of the month, the flagship of this range being the Note 14 Pro Plus, but you can go all the way down to just the Redmi Note 14 that kind of comes in at a really reasonable price. I think it's just €199. And obviously you're going to be making some concessions for the features, but that's going to be coming to Tesco. Like, this range is coming to Tesco, Vodafone, Harvey Norman and Air. So they're going to be available across a lot of networks and stores. And like you said, people will be able to go in and hopefully get their hands on to see if they actually like the feel and the look of the devices. And our full review then of that Note 14 Pro Plus is coming to the site as well soon.
Okay, brilliant stuff. It's interesting, some of the texts that have been coming into the Pat Kenny Show over the last, say, 3 or 4 months have been people looking for smaller phones, because just looking at the specs of the phones you've talked us through there now, they all have pretty sizable screens, which I'm sure makes sense for people like me and you who work from our phones, who love taking photographs, messing around with different apps on our phones. Is that the way the market is going across the board now? Or is it a case that you do have that tiered system where you have the base model, the Pro model, then the Plus model and so on?
Yeah, well, this is kind of like, in terms of the comprehensive nature of what Redmi are offering here, there is a kind of a good discrepancy between the sizes and the features. But in terms of physical dimensions of a device, we kind of saw Pixel answering, again, Google answering a lot of consumers' needs or desires last August when they brought the Pixel 9 Pro out, which basically give you all the top of the line flagship features that the Pixel 9 series was offering in a much smaller or more compact form factor. I think the screen was just 6.2 or 6.3 inches. So those phones used to be kind of a lot more prevalent. Sony were kind of big for doing it. I think Asus had their Zen phones, again, not immediately available in Ireland when they were around, but that's, I do appreciate people just want a phone that does it all, but at a smaller form factor. So I know And then one, obviously iPhone have their kind of, what we see is their entry level device. The iPhone 16 comes in at a kind of a smaller footprint than the kind of the 16 Pro Max devices or the so yeah, like people mightn't have as much choice as they used to have, but there is devices out there if they do a bit of looking and decide that they're happier to go for that smaller form factor, and then making those kind of concessions here and there if needs be for the different brands.
And we do know, of course, that we have a Samsung launch imminent. So we'll see what they bring out. But another device, and I think you've already had a bit of a sneak peek, the Honor Magic 7 Pro, which is launching next month.
Yeah, so I was lucky enough to get over to the European launch for this new phone over in Slovenia at Lake Bled. You know, one of the most picturesque places I've ever been in my life, to be honest. So a very, very impressive location to kind of showcase this phone, and then more importantly, showcase its cameras. So Honor, as we've been kind of talking highly about their folding devices, this is now their new kind of what they call candy bar or non-folding device or non-folding flagship device coming to the Irish market just next month in February. It's going to be coming in at €1,299, so one of the most expensive phones on this list, but again packing some incredibly impressive specs. That large display we've been talking about for the kind of the flagship level credentials in terms of picture quality, 5,000 nits of peak brightness. So what that basically is, it's going to be crazy, crazy bright, and you'll never have any issues using it outside. Like the OnePlus I mentioned, it's going to be packing the latest Snapdragon 8 Elite processor, so extremely powerful, more than capable for everyone's daily use, 12 gigs of RAM. And again, the camera is where they really try to showcase the USPs that I got to test out when I was at the launch event this week. You've got a 50 megapixel wide sensor, you've got a 50 megapixel ultrawide, but they've got a 200 megapixel telephoto lens. So this is one of the larger sensors that's been put into a telephoto lens in particular in a handset, and that's a 3x optical. All these are all numbers, but what your listeners need to know is that the zoom is very impressive on a sheer practical or kind of physical level in terms of the specs. And then they are, as I said, with these other devices, adding their own AI flourishes on top. That AI is being implemented into the camera experience, that when you take an incredibly distant digital zoom shot with this lens, AI comes in to help tidy up the edges and just give you a bit much more clarity. So we're working through a review for that device. It's definitely an impressive piece of kit, but also comes at a premium price point. That's going to be available, as we said, in February, and it's going to be SIM-free in Harvey Norman and on the Three network.
Yeah, I think this is a really good time if you are due an upgrade or if you're due a phone or if you just want a new phone. I'd say between now and March is a really, really good time to be looking around. But also what I find fascinating is that the phones are now, I suppose, first and foremost being advertised with the SIM-free price, because we know that the digital mobile networks is where it's at in terms of value for money on your phone bill. So while €1,300 is a massive amount of money, a phone with that spec that you've just laid out there now, like, that sounds like it's not only built to work, but it's built to last as well.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think, as you mentioned, all of the smartphone manufacturers are fully aware of the drift, you know, especially in the Irish market, I imagine the drift away, thankfully, in certain instances from those kind of aggressively priced or kind of on those highly priced phone contracts that people would have been locked into for multiple years and not knowing and not really aware of how much they were paying. So more and more people I speak to are buying out of contract, buying the device up front for whatever price they're paying, and then getting those really nicely or more competitively priced SIM-free or standalone SIM-only deals. So they kind of have a lot more options and variability they can play with. And it's just, again, good for the consumer to be able to have that choice and across devices and then across networks, really, and they can pick and choose what works best for them.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. As John said, you can read reviews already or in the coming days of all the devices we just mentioned there. It's theeffect.net. For the moment, John, thanks so much.
Cheers, Jess.
And if you're looking for more information about the best value in terms of your, I suppose, price plan, so whether you are on a bill plan or if you're pay as you go and you just want something that offers incredible value and zero hassle, I know I've said it before, but look at the digital mobile networks. Bonkers.ie is a great resource. It does price comparisons. I have my parents now on GOMO, so it's 15 quid a month. You get your calls, text, data, and it just works. There's also Clear Mobile, which runs off the Vodafone network. There's 48 that runs off the Three network. There's Tesco Mobile. There's a whole host of options out there. So if you are spending more than 20 quid a month on your phone, firstly, ask yourself, do you need to be? Secondly, look out at the options that are there in terms of digital mobile networks. And thirdly, make the move. Save yourself that money. Yes, you do have to buy the phone outright. I think Sky Mobile is the only one that offers in terms of buying devices. But you could save yourself an absolute fortune. So again, bonkers.ie is a good port to call just to scope out the options. But shop around and make the move for sure. Now, when we come back here on News Talk, I'm going to bring you a chat that I had in Las Vegas about a new panoramic windscreen. Stay tuned.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Before the break, I was chatting with John Riley about some of the new devices launching here in Ireland over the coming weeks. And one that we mentioned was the new flagship device from Samsung. And I'm delighted to say that the head of Samsung Mobile Ireland will be on the show next week. So we will have a full guide through whatever it is that they launch next week. Now, I fell out of the habit in recent weeks of giving you some recommendations of things to watch, read or listen to. But I'm back on that train. And my first recommendation of the year is this.
Did you kill my daughter?
Go and have the time of your life.
Bye, Dennis.
See ya.
Hello?
Are you sure? Are you completely sure?
M103, 270 people killed.
Threat warnings were ignored. We have a right to know.
This is restricted. Where did you get it?
I just want answers, Minister.
You haven't stopped since she died.
I will never stop. Up until we know the answer to everything.
Suspects have been identified.
Two Libyan nationals.
Libya? I thought Iran did it.
Gone through the whole case over and over. It's a lie.
This is how you cope.
I am not coping.
Gaddafi murders people.
Jem, tread carefully. You're no good to anyone dead.
You have two other children. I want to be around life, not death every day.
Why is there so much secrecy around this? Your government knew. They all knew.
To know who killed my daughter.
That is the trailer for Lockerbie on Sky, starring Colin Firth. We binged all of the episodes at home in one sitting and were glued to every second. It's a tragedy that I was kind of aware of but didn't know a whole lot about. It is brilliantly acted, shot and produced and would highly recommend you pop it on your to watch list. But as ever, I'm looking for your recommendations. What are you reading, watching, listening to? Email me any recommendations. Yeah, you can get me on techtalk@newstalk.com. I have to be honest, I'm struggling with reading this year. I've been trying to read The Bee Sting by Paul Murray. Yes, I'm late to the party, but I just don't seem to have the attention span. But again, if you've any brilliant book recommendations, pop them in an email. Last week's show came to you from Las Vegas. I was there for CES. I caught up with Derek Riley of Nevo.ie. And during my chat with Derek, I mentioned that I got to see the new BMW Panoramic iDrive. This is a display bar that runs the full width of the windscreen within the car with key information for the driver. So the idea is that it's in your line of sight. Rather than having a control cluster on the dashboard, everything you need is just ahead of you. Now, while I was at CES, I caught up with Stefan Jurak, who is Senior Vice President UI UX Development at BMW Group, who told me more about the Panoramic iDrive. He also explained what his role entails. and how the company ensures they have the right balance between technology and a focused driving experience.
Basically, at BMW, in charge for everything on the development side around digital experience. So we're talking about my BMW app, all the backend services, telematics, navigation, IVI system, displays, head unit, electronics in the car. So a complete package, so to speak.
You have a big brief.
Yeah.
What's interesting is the average consumer, the average driver may not think about the work that goes into the development of these things. If they've sat into a car in the last 5 years versus a car 15 years ago, it's a completely different experience. Can you talk me through the elements of change that have happened? Have there been key points along the way? Things like the app, for example. Have there been landmark moments over the last 5 or 6 years that have brought us to what we've seen this week at CES?
So there's a couple of things. You know, I think the most important thing is all our vehicles for a long time are already connected. So we always have a stable connection to our backend services, which is a huge advantage because we can build a lot of applications on the backend side as well, which is not only sitting in the car. That's one thing. The next thing is, I think the consumer perception concerning how do I interact with my car and what kind of services I'm expecting changed dramatically. Mm-hmm. You know, over the time of the success of smartphones and all these services, people demanding completely different services and the interaction between services changed dramatically. Actually, I can remember when we conducted customer studies and people told us, I don't want to talk to a machine. So I don't want to use speech at all. Why should I talk to my machine? You know, I don't like this. If I would ask the same question again, I think the answer would be a completely different one. Mm-hmm. Or the answer is a completely different one. We are capable of understanding what our customers are doing in the car, and you can actually see over time how dramatically it's changed how people interact. So for example, things which are context of alphanumeric, so entering an address, making a phone call out of an address, a name out of a phone book, people used to do it with controls. Today, the dominant modality people are doing is speech. Mm-hmm. So the importance of speech is increasing dramatically. And then, like I said, they want to have service continuity. So I want to listen to the same streaming service I have on my phone, in my house, in my car as well. Mm-hmm. So this kind of expectation to the services is certainly huge. Freshness of the car, you know. In the past, it was like you get your car from the dealership and it stays like it is until you sell it or you get rid of it. But today the expectation is features should come better, new features should come over time while you're having the car in your hand. And so you're talking about remote software updates, over-the-air updates, feature updates and all these things. And you mentioned already the My BMW app, which is a great success story for us. I think we have more than 12 million users, I think. So that was the last number I heard.
More,
13 million users, which are using on a constant base their mobile phone to interact with their car, mm-hmm. which is a dramatic change as well. Especially, just to give you an example, as an EV driver, you want to know what is the status of your charging. Can you do preconditioning of my car? So it's for us an interesting channel to interact with our customers as well. So we'll see that you can configure your car on your phone when you're sitting in. Then there's the expectation of personalization, which is getting even bigger. And we talked about in our press conference as well. People want to customize their the digital part of their product. You want to carry over the preferences from your car to the next one. Then you see people don't want to have a key. Then you go to a digital key. And you can see it's not gradually. Sometimes it's shifted really quick from the usage what you're doing in your car.
Mm. How do you balance the embracing of innovation, so the new stuff that's out there, alongside the technology that serves a purpose and fulfills the consumer's need? Because we've seen different companies in the past embrace technology for the sake of it, because mm-hmm. it exists. Mm-hmm. The impression that I get from what you've done at BMW is that it's very intentional and everything has to have a purpose. How do you balance that seesaw along the way?
You know, I think sometimes people think to be the first is always a good thing. I don't think so. We really have to take a clear look at the technology itself and have to say, like you said, does it fulfill the purpose it is intended to? Or it's just like an engineering geeky thing, so I want to do this. I'm an engineer by myself. However, at the end of the day, since we have a huge fleet there where we can actually get a good insight what our customers are doing, what our customers are doing, we really can reflect, you know, are these functions actually used? Are the people using it? How do they use them? And how do we really get into a better point? And before we introduce, for example, a new concept and what you see with our BMW Panoramic Vision, we did a over a longer period of time, a lot of studies with customers in the different markets. So we're building seating bugs, we're building models, we've even built driving simulators or cars and ship them around the world and do customer testing with a lot of different customers. They don't even know that they are getting doing a test for BMW, so it's not clear which brand we're talking about. And we have an idea or a hypothesis what people like, and we test this with the people. Different backgrounds, different car, different knowledge, and we really try to target them for our group, and then we get a better understanding. And believe me, we often had ideas. We had bring in this test, we said, nope, that was not a good idea. Mm-hmm. Let's do it completely different. Mm-hmm. And this is before we product hits the market. It already has a lot of loops of retesting, rethinking to get a better understanding. Mm-hmm. And our focus is really on driving. I think it's a little bit, you often hear the term, you know, your car is the next smartphone with wheels. Mm-hmm. Actually, I don't like this at all. It's still a car. And it's not still a car, it is a car. It's about driving. And your expectation should be that your digital experience, you know, from your home is perfectly fitted for your driving environment. And this is our task, mm-hmm. not to generate a new feature or a new service, but to make this feature available in the driving environment in the best way. Mm.
And that really struck me when I did the VR simulation mm-hmm. with the Panoramic iDrive, mm-hmm. because rather than interacting with a screen to my left or my right, depending mm-hmm. on what side you're on, the information is in my eyeline. I am fully focused yeah. on the road in yeah. front of me. Yeah. The fact that it's customizable means, again, I can tweak so that it suits me and yeah. my driving style. But back home in Ireland, there have been concerns around the level of tech in the car and the distraction mm-hmm. factor. Can you just explain how you balance that to ensure that, again, the information is there, the technology is working, but eyes are firmly on the road?
You know, first of all, it's like I said, it's our philosophy, and you can clearly see it in our new concept. It's not more from everything, it's not always better. Nobody wants to eat a pizza with everything, you know. however, you know, the idea is basically to say, let's really think about where can we display the relevant information at the right point in time, at the right location. This is the question we're always asking ourselves. So do you really need this information right now? And if you take a look at our setup, you know, is this information more detailed and a different way to consume? Then we do it maybe on our central display. Mm-hmm. If it's highly driving relevant, we do it in front of the driver. But then it's clearly driven by what you have to do next and not a complex thing. And these kind of this kind of concepts, we are actually testing with a lot of people in our driving simulator. It's not like sitting there, but they have a driving task, and we're measuring their reaction time. We take a look at their glance time. How long do they look actually on it? Are they really distracted? Are they capable of holding the lane and things like this? So we do a lot of simulation testing as well, mm-hmm. just to get a better understanding. Is this really distracting? Can you handle it while you're driving? How huge is your mental load, you know, because at the end it's a side task what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Briefly, I just want to ask about the partners that enable this to become a reality. We know that BMW is a legacy brand. It has endured much time, but it's clearly embracing this new wave of innovation. How important is it that you identify the right partners and that you build that that trusted relationship to ensure that what they're offering suits and fits not only your brand but your customers as well?
You know, I think this partnership is absolutely crucial, because at the end of the day, I think designing and developing a car is an integration task. Mm-hmm. Because if you take a look at the product, there are so many different technology in, and our biggest task is to integrate different technology in one product. And at the end of the day, we really have to ask yourself, what is your core competence? What are you best in? What can you do it best? So on the digital side, we think we can generate the perfect fit for an architecture for our car, and we should be able to integrate as quick as possible new services and functionality which are developed by other partners. We always talk about a pick and choose strategy. So I always want to have the best product available on the market in my car, and how can I integrate it in the smartest possible way? And this is actually how we approach our partners as well. You know, just to give you an example, for nobody, we should never come, just a simple example, on the idea to build our own music service. Why shouldn't I do this? I think with this example, it's quite obvious. There are certain brands people want to have in the car. And, you know, everybody wants to listen to Spotify or Tidal or whatever. So we talk to these partners to make sure that we have the integration in a car, but not just an integration. Our requirement is we want to have the best possible integration in an automotive interpretation, that it works perfectly in an automotive environment. Mm-hmm. And this you can go step by step if you're talking, for example, about speech. We are working together with Amazon Alexa, and we want to have in the best speech integration in our car, but we want to keep the privacy in our cars as well. So we had a special arrangement with Amazon that we get a special contained environment for our Alexa instance, for example, that the privacy is kept for our customer and the data is going nowhere. Mm-hmm. And this is actually the way how we interact with a partner. And in China, for example, Amazon is not a player at all on the speech side. We're using Alibaba, Banma, just to do the same task on the speech side. So our system is built around the idea of saying, okay, this is the best service. Let's plug it in our environment. Make sure that the requirements on BMW side, like privacy, look and feel, performance, are on the right path. And then we are able to work with this partner. Mm-hmm.
My final question is just about going back again to the customer. Do you get the sense that there is a willingness and a want for them to not only utilize this technology, but to get a better understanding of how and why it is beneficial? Is there a job on the dealership's part, for example, to fully explain and illustrate how to utilize this technology rather than it being in the car, but a particular non-tech savvy driver not necessarily fully understanding how to get the most from it?
You know, I think that's, from my perspective, a really tricky discussion. First of all, I think a system should be built around the idea that with nobody explaining it, you should be able to use it and have fun with it. Because if you, nobody is reading a manual, nobody is doing this. And everybody is kind of annoyed if you have to. Mm-hmm. So I would say you have to guarantee that the easy entry is given by every customer. You know, mechanism you use to lock you in, you know, if you're locking in with your BMW ID for the first time, you just scan your QR code with your camera on your phone, the My BMW app's opened up and you're completely locked in and the setup of the car is happening. Mm-hmm. This is something customers doing on a daily basis, 100 times a day, because everybody today is used to do QR code scanning. That's why we implemented exactly this mechanism everybody knows. However, the systems what we are building has a lot of capabilities, and sometimes customers are not like tech savvy or not have enough fun or time to play around with the system and discover a lot. We see that some things are not discovered in our system, even if they are there. And then the dealership can play a crucial role, like to saying, giving you a hint, like, did you know that? But it should not be like, let me show you how to drive the car. You know, that's not a good idea. Because people entering the dealership, they all have a driving license. They have often a long driving history. And it's not a good idea to tell somebody who has a long driving experience how to drive a car. This is, should happen all by yourself. But if it's coming to, you know, to really new feature, it's more like pointing out, asking for this. And at this point, we're coming back to the complete digital experience. We have a lot of different channels. You know, at the end of the day, if you log in your BMW and you're using the My BMW app, what about 95% of our customers doing, I can give you proposals in the app as well. Like, you never used your adaptive cruise control. Might be a good idea to test it. Or I can give you, you know, a smart hint over this channel. So It's a mixed thing you can do, and you have to think about different channels, not only in the dealership. That's like, okay, the guy in the dealership should explain the car fully is not a good idea because people don't want to take the time. There will be people who are super happy to go to a dealership, sit down with a person there and get a long explanation, and there are people saying, I have 10 seconds and I'm out. So it's a huge variety of different characters, and we have to deal with them somehow.
That was Stefan Jurak, Senior Vice President UI UX Development at BMW Group, speaking to me at CES last week in Las Vegas. I would love to know your thoughts on the in-car technology these days. As a non-driver, but a tech fan, I'm always impressed by the kit. But I would love to know what additions have been beneficial to you if you are a driver. You can drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com. Now, when we come back here on News Talk, we'll look at President Biden's legacy in terms of his battle against big tech.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to the final part of this week's Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Now, we know that the inauguration of Donald Trump will take place on Monday. News Talk's Sean Defoe will be in Washington and will have full updates across the week. But as President Biden begins to evacuate the Oval Office, we saw his farewell address, and there was one part in particular that jumped out at me.
Americans are being buried under an avalanche of misinformation and disinformation, enabling the abuse of power. The free press is crumbling. Editors are disappearing. Social media is giving up on fact-checking. The truth is smothered by lies told for power and for profit. We must hold the social platforms accountable to protect our children, our families, and our very democracy from the abuse of power.
Yeah, it's very clear to see and to understand who and what Joe Biden is referring to there in his farewell address from the Oval Office. Those comments are coming at a time when big tech has, from my point of view anyway, and this is my personal opinion, let itself down. In the last few weeks alone, we have seen two of the most influential figures, not only in technology, but in the world, make decisions and take action that will have implications on individuals right around the world. Obviously, we know that Elon Musk is very closely associated now with President-elect Donald Trump. He's also been inserting himself in elections in Germany. He's been very vocal about what's going on in the United Kingdom. And it is scary because his influence is significant. And it's just interesting to see where his involvement and his interest level in global politics will go. Then obviously, as we spoke about on the show last week, Mark Zuckerberg has made significant changes at Meta. So for those who don't know, Meta is the parent company of Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp. They have VR headsets. They have a whole host of strings to their bow. And, you know, when Joe Biden was vice president to Barack Obama, he was very vocal on the need to put manners on big tech and to have greater transparency around how they work and to have parameters in place for what they can and can't do. We now know that when Biden was in office, he tried to implement certain things. But as he leaves office, I would say that we're in no better a position than we were 4 years ago, and potentially even worse. I do believe that the end of fact-checking on Meta platforms in the US is going to be detrimental. I do think the reversal of the diversity, equality and inclusion programs at companies like Meta is going to be detrimental. We are in a turbulent time from a political, geopolitical, a million other ways. And to see these changes happening now is disconcerting. Obviously, we don't know what will happen here in Europe and how it will be regulated. But we do know that, you know, people are gearing up for a bit of a battle. One of the big sticking points that seemed to be a sticking point, I guess, for Joe Biden was the TikTok ban. So there was talk that TikTok would be banned in the United States on January 19th. unless the company was sold. The company has not been sold as of this moment in time. However, we've been reading in the last 24 hours that President Biden is not going to enforce the ban on TikTok. It's now going to be left in the hands of President-elect Donald Trump. There's been reports that the chief executive of TikTok will be in attendance at the inauguration of President Trump. I read some reporting saying that the executive is going to have prime seating at the inauguration. So make of that what you will. But I guess in the context of Joe Biden, I don't know. I think a lot of people had high hopes that he would be the one to bring in European style legislation or regulations to the United States that would see greater manners being put on big tech. But it's safe to say that that hasn't happened. And I think we're going to be in for a fairly turbulent few years, to put it mildly. But technology and the responsibility of those running big technology has never been more important. And I have never felt more disappointed, I suppose, in the leadership that we have seen. But I would love to know your thoughts. You can email me techtalk@newstalk.com. That's it from me this week. If you have missed any of the show, you can listen back in full on the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. I'll be back with Shane and Kira on Monday's Newstalk Breakfast. But in the meantime, have a great weekend.